Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, buttermilk sky, I'm a keeping my eye peeled on you. What's a good word tonight? Are you gonna be mellow tonight? Oh, buttermilk sky, can't you see my little donkey and me? We're as happy as a Christmas tree, heading for the one I love. I'm gonna pop her the question, that question. Do you, darling, do you do? It'll be easy, so easy. If I can only bank on you, buttermilk sky. Yeah. I'm telling you why now, you know. Keep it in mind tonight. Keep a brushing those clouds from sight. Oh, buttermilk sky. Don't you fail me when I'm needing you most. Hang a moon above a hitching post. Hitch me to the one I love. I'm gonna pop her the question, that question. Do you, darling, do you do? It'll be easy, so easy. If I can only bank on you, oh, buttermilk sky. I'm telling you why, now you know. Keep it in mind tonight. Keep a brushing those clouds from sight. Oh, buttermilk sky. Don't you fail me when I'm needing you most. Hang a moon above a hitching post. Hitch me to the one I love. You can if you try. Don't tell me no lies. Will you be mellow and bright tonight? Oh, buttermilk sky.
Hoagy Carmichael, James Bostic here with the Conservatives Perspective. Welcome, everybody. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a recorded version of the program that goes out on the Mojo 50 radio network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, well, you should be, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio, mojo50.com. Well, welcome, everybody. It's good to be here with you on this Thursday night. This has been a star-studded week for a conservative's perspective. Tuesday night, of course, we had our friend, longtime friend of the program, Michael Cutler was on, and I hope you buckled up for that one, because anytime Mike's on, it's just good practice. I'll just tell you that. It's good practice. And then last night, of course, you won't hear it yet, but I spent a little time with our friend Gary Binford with United Patriots Uprising, who has taken off. Man, he is in the stratosphere. Started this about a year ago, and look at where he's at today. And I was very flattered, very honored that he asked me to come on his program. So I did that yesterday. And then tonight, no less spectacular, no less riveting. Our guest this evening is Claire Lopez, also another friend to the program. She's always been very generous and gracious with her time when we've asked her to come on. She's a former CIA analyst and also former associate of Frank Gaffney with the Center for Security Policy, doing some great work there, and now visionary behind Lopez Liberty. And you can catch her on, I think it's unitedwest.org. Anyway, we'll let her tell you about that, because she is here, and we're very happy to have her back. Claire Lopez. Claire, welcome to the program once again. It's great to have you with us.
Well, good evening, and thank you for having me. Glad to be with you.
I have, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, here in a little bit more than a month, Claire's going to be one of the headlining speakers at Rock the Red, Greenville, South Carolina. You can check that out online, Rock the Red, and see if they've got tickets still available. Now I got mine, and I'm looking forward to seeing you there. Claire, I have a clip that I would like to play, and I would like your opinion on it. It's about 2 minutes. It's from a man named Yuri Bezmenov. And Yuri Bezmenov was a KGB agent who defected a long, long time, about 40-some years ago. And in 1984, he was being interviewed. I'm not even sure who the guy is, but it wasn't so much what the interviewer had to say as it was Mr. Bezmenov's response. And I'm going to play that, Claire, and I'd like for you to expound upon it after we're done and tell me how close or how far away from the mark he comes with his assessment of what. Right here, I'll just play the clip. Here we go. Maybe. Yep.
Well, you spoke several times before about ideological subversion. That is a phrase that I'm afraid some Americans don't fully understand.
There's nothing to do with espionage. Only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process, which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interest of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To get rid society of these people, you need another 20 or 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of the United States society. The next stage is destabilization. This time, subverter does not care about your ideas and the patterns of your consumption, whether you eat junk food and get fat and flabby, it doesn't matter anymore. This time, and it takes only from 2 to 5 years to destabilize a nation, what matters is essentials, economy, foreign relations, defense systems. The next stage, of course, is crisis. It may take only up to 6 weeks to bring a country to the verge of crisis. You can see it in Central America now. And after crisis, with a violent change of power, structure, and economy, you have so-called the period of normalization. It may last indefinitely.
And if we take a look at the last, let's just say the last 4 years, with Antifa, with BLM, with COVID, with Delta, with Omicron, how accurate is what Mr. Bezmenov said, and how close are we to that?
Well, that's a very good reminder. Yuri Bezmenov, of course, defected to the West back in, I think it was 1972. He spent the rest of the years of his life, which was up until I think he died in the early 1990s, trying to warn the West of the communist Marxist infiltration of our societies. And he speaks very good English, as you can hear. And he was on numerous programs, interviewed, and he tried as hard as he could to explain to Americans. But, you know, whether it's because most Americans are really good people, you know, the Judeo-Christian moral foundation, it blinds them. It makes them soft. And they look at other people. The default position is you're good, you're a fine person, and the necessary suspicion, or the CI consciousness, we might say, counterintelligence consciousness, national security consciousness, about an agenda like the communist agenda, which has been in play in the West, in the United States, since the Russian Revolution of 1917. I mean, we're past 100 years. They've been at this. But, you know, for whatever reason, Americans are just not very well suited at defending themselves with CI antenna up, a suspicious mindset. And so when Bezmenov is talking about these four stages, the demoralization, destabilization, crisis, and normalization, within a society, he's talking about plan of action. He's talking about an actual playbook, if you will, of the communists. Now, back a century ago, the leadership of the communist world movement was in Moscow, it was Russia. Today, I would say that has shifted to Beijing.
Yes.
Excuse me. And the Chinese Communist Party, but very much still the same sort of sequence of events. And it is as he says, influence operations, infiltration, information operations that are far more important and dangerous to this republic of ours than pure espionage, stealing the codes or, you know, the specs for the new submarine or what have you.
Right.
It is influence operations that are far more dangerous, and because of our makeup, our moral, ethical makeup, we don't see it.
Well, and I think you made a particularly cogent point when you talk about China, the communist China taking the lead on this. And your friend Frank Gaffney has talked about this for a long time as to how hard communist China has been working to establish hegemony throughout the Pacific Rim. And those influence operations we see very clearly today. Look at the cooperation between Disney and China, between Nike and China, between the NBA and China. Nike people are aware that, you know, of what's going on in these concentration camps, and it's no different than what the Nazis did. It's tyranny, it's oppression, it's taking these people and squeezing the life out of them brutally. And it seems to me that seems to be where we're at. Sometimes it seems that there's no amount of accurate, factual information that's going to sway those people once they've been seduced by this process.
Yeah, seduced is a good word for it. And as far as the Chinese Communist Party goes, the CCP, that effort has been ongoing for many decades. Of course, then President Richard Nixon, together with his Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, persuaded the upper echelons of the United States National Security Establishment government that bringing China into the family of nations, as it were, opening up possibilities for trade and commerce and economic back and forth among our countries would be the best way to gradually persuade the CCP to move towards a more Western-style, liberal, democratic style of governance. Well, of course, that never happened, but they did take full advantage, especially after the death of Mao Zedong and his number two, Zhou Enlai, in 1976, and when Deng Xiaoping took over in the late 70s. Especially after that, they took full advantage of the opportunities for what would you say, maybe dabbling in capitalism. It's kind of a predatory capitalism or a mercantilist capitalism. It's not the Western style, but they got rich. They were able to develop and expand, and what they've done in China is, I don't think most Westerners have a clue how many modern, glittering, totally technologically advanced cities they've built in just the last 30 years. I mean, they've moved hundreds of millions of peasants out of the countryside into the cities to work in the factories and the economic industries that are springing up. They're ahead of us. They've advanced beyond us. They have more ships. They have, obviously, more troops. Technology that sometimes, very often, they stole from us, intellectual
right.
property theft and otherwise, has fueled their technological advancement. They're ahead of us in space. They're ahead of us in anti-satellite weaponry. They're ahead of us in hypersonic cruise missiles and hypersonic glide vehicles. On and on I could go, and this is all because of the opening that began in the 1970s, thinking it would be a good idea. But the Chinese had other ideas, and they've taken full advantage of that and full advantage of us to infiltrate over these decades all of our institutions, meaning academic, business institutions,
oh, yeah.
Wall Street, our healthcare system, you know, all kinds of industries, especially technological, government, obviously, at every level, from local on up to Congress and the White House. They're smart people, and we're just not.
I think that, and I'm not exactly sure, but based on what limited things I've read, I think clearly that Nixon and Kissinger were operating from the best of intentions, and perhaps they considered this to be the least confrontational method of dealing
with
the Chinese.
Definitely.
But
I mean,
but
they
at the
were
same time, we opened
mistaken,
that door.
But they had good intentions.
Yes. And at the same time, though, they opened that door for the Chinese to more efficiently prosecute their unrestricted warfare against us.
Sure. That's exactly right. And of course, the book that you're mentioning there, Unrestricted Warfare, is the master's thesis of two colonels in the PLA, People's Liberation Army, that was published in 1999, I guess in Mandarin and in English translated some years later. And it lays out the plan of warfare for China, which believes at its leadership level that it deserves to be the hegemon or the ba of the entire world. And they are the middle kingdom, and they should be the hegemon of, as they think of it, all under heaven. And they sincerely believe this, and they're doing everything they can to achieve it. We're very slow to catch on.
And when we couple that with the fact that we have a president and an administration on a lot of levels that are financially beholden to the Chinese.
They're compromised. They're deeply, badly compromised.
Absolutely.
And so are many others. I mean, it's not just the president's family.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Claire.
I was going to tell you about a speech that was given, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago. And it was the dean of a prominent university in China, and his name is Di Dong Sheng. And he was standing up on the stage of probably in the university and a great big appreciative audience sitting out in the auditorium. And he was bragging. This was professionally filmed, by the way. This wasn't somebody's cell phone camera. This was professionally filmed. It was meant to get to the West. It has subtitles. He's speaking in Mandarin, of course. And he's bragging about how the Chinese have been able to infiltrate and dominate and, really compromise Wall Street and all of our business industry in America, as you were mentioning, Nike and other companies who see nothing but dollar signs and a 1.4-person potential market over there. That's all they see. They could care less about the Uyghurs, the Tibetans, the Mongols, the Manchurians, or anybody else that the Han Chinese have subjugated. And so Di Dong Sheng is up there talking about how they managed to compromise and dominate Wall Street in particular. He's talking especially about industry, banking, finance, business in America. And he says, and then came Donald Trump, and we couldn't do it anymore, he said. So we had to get rid of Trump. I mean, just like that. He says, so we had to get rid of Trump. And the implication is now things are going swimmingly again for them.
You know, I was having a thought while you were saying that. All the noise that was made during President Trump's administration and even in that run-up to the election about Russian collusion, about American politicians being in bed with the communists, and there's just so much projection, and I'm using that in a psychological term. You know, there's so much projection that comes from the left that if you apply that, you can almost tell exactly what they're doing, because all you have to do is look at what they're accusing their enemies of.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. We know now, of course, that all of Russiagate and FISAgate and all of that, you know, was a plot of the Hillary Clinton camp, the Democrat Party, and that the ones actually working hand in glove with the Russians were actually the Hillary Clinton team and the Democrat Party. not Trump at all, or anybody in his campaign at all. Complete lies. And only thanks to dogged, diligent investigations by Congressman Devin Nunes, for example, and
right.
Investigative journalists. Do we know all of this now? And the terrific work of Tom Fitton and the group over at Judicial Watch using the FOIA system to obtain documents and emails and so forth. That's the only way we actually know about it all, but it took a long time to get it.
When I was talking with Gary last night, and what you're talking about there, we've had all these different scandals, all these things, all this chaff, all this dirt, this mud that the left has been slinging. And then, they get caught in it just enough. And everything that's happened, every scandal, I was talking to Gary about this, everything that's happened, all the speculation that the informed people and the people who know how to look at these things and understand them, all the speculation that they came out with ultimately in the end, and we didn't know it until 3 or 4 years after the fact, but all of it was true. I remember the very first time you came on the program, we were in the early throes of the Wuhan virus. And just about every, I'm trying to think of anything that you said that couldn't be disproved in terms of how it came to the West, and how it escaped the laboratory, and then how the Chinese just went ahead and decided to capitalize on it since the genie was already out of the bottle. They did their best to direct it away from themselves and on the rest of the world. And the things that you said then, now we find out within the last couple of months, pretty much spot on.
Well, thank you. Yes. I'll mention a couple of things. One is that I'm very nearly finished with a terrific book by an Australian investigative journalist named Sherry Markson, M-A-R-K-S-O-N, Markson. And the name of the book is What Really Happened in Wuhan. It was just published earlier this year, and she has done tremendous research on China's biological weapons program and all of the elements of that, and how this particular SARS-CoV-2 was let loose deliberately, otherwise, accidentally. We don't really know that part, but certainly it originated in the military labs, not Wuhan, but the military labs of the PLA, over a period of many, many years. This isn't something new. This isn't something recent. They've been working on this for a long, long time. And it only went to Wuhan kind of recently, apparently, perhaps for vaccine work, because they, of course, wanted to have a vaccine once they let it out or it got out or whatever. The other thing I'll mention is an op-ed piece that I just finished writing today, and I sent it to Newsmax. If they'll answer me, that'd be great to see if they'll publish it. But it is about precisely this long history that we have in totally open sources from Chinese leadership official figures talking, totally openly about their efforts to develop an offensive biological weapons program. I'll just give you a couple of examples. One has to do with the defense minister of China back in the early 2000s. And thanks to a good friend and blogger, Jeff Nyquist, back in September of 2019, he posted a blog entry called The Secret Speech of Qi Haoqian. Qi Haoqian was the defense minister, and he died sometime in the mid-2000s, not exactly sure the date. But in this speech that Jeff is reproducing at his blog site, Qi was addressing a high-level group of CCP members, and she was speaking to them. Now, I guess the speech was not supposed to get out, but it eventually did anyway. But he spoke in really terrifying terms of the need for special means, biological weapons, that is, to, quote, clean up America and make room for Chinese to find Lebensraum. They actually used that word, German,
oh,
Lebensraum.
Wow.
And he talked about research into ethnic-specific bioweapons with the advent of domination by Chinese of AI, artificial intelligence, and CRISPR techniques, the gene editing manipulation techniques. They're able to do this. I'll give you one more. Reading Sherry Markson's book that I just mentioned, a couple of nights ago I came to the chapter where she talks about then-director of the NIH, National Institute of Health, Institutes of Health, Francis Collins, who is retiring at the end of this year, 2021. But back in 2015, according to his own online tweet, it's in Twitter, he was bragging, I guess, about the fact that he had formalized collaboration with the Chinese Academy of Military Sciences. This is the PLA, the Chinese, the People's Liberation Army scientific network, organization for managing China's biological weapons program. This is what Francis Collins did in 2015. He's either clueless or he didn't care. I don't know which. I could go on and on. This is in my article, which will get published somewhere. I'm not quite sure where, but just turn it in today. Happy to see, actually, that just today, December 16 is today's date, 2021, the U.S. Commerce Department has just imposed a bunch of new sanctions against a number of Chinese biotech companies and government entities, too. For what they're doing in Xinjiang, the human rights abuses against the Uyghurs. And the sanctions are aimed at members or how would you say it? They belong to the network of China's Academy of Military Science, Military Sciences. So that's good action as of today. To clamp down on them with U.S. sanctions. That's great. But has the NIH discontinued, disassociated itself completely from the PLA's Academy of Military Medical Sciences? Have they? I don't know. Has the Department of Defense, the Pentagon, Health and Human Services Cabinet Department, NIH, Fauci Shop, NIAID, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, have they all disassociated with Chinese biological weapons laboratories? Have they? Funding, collaboration, research? Have they? I haven't seen it.
And one would think that, if nothing else, from a position of optics, that they would be compelled to do so.
Well, you know, back in the Obama administration years, the funding, the official United States government funding flowing from Health and Human Services on down to this nonprofit EcoHealth Alliance run by Peter Daszak, down to the NIH, NIAID, and so forth, and labs like the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, the Galveston Lab, that funding was cut off because the Obama administration became alarmed at the kind of research that was going on, specifically gain-of-function. Gain-of-function research just means that scientists in the lab using these AI and CRISPR techniques genetically manipulate the genomic sequence of a virus, let's say. Could be anything, but let's say a virus, in order to enhance its capabilities. And those capabilities could be anything. Better survivability in the sun, in sunlight, in humidity, or to make it more transmissible, human to human, and or more lethal, the higher mortality rate. And they became alarmed at this research that was going on in our university laboratories, like North Carolina, and at our national labs, like at Galveston, and in collaboration with the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Ralph Barrick ran that program out of University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and he was working directly with the one they call the Bat Lady, Xi Jing Li. Xi Jing Li runs one of the laboratories inside of the Wuhan Institute of Virology. She heads up one of the labs in that institute. And they were working directly with her. And the thing is, this is maybe the good part, all these studies are published in English online. You can look them up. You can read them. I have. And so the funding was cut off under Obama, but then some folks did an end run around the ban on the funding and got it reinstated in 2017 at the beginning of the Trump administration. President Trump didn't even know about that fact until a question came up at one of the press conferences early in 2020. Maybe it was April or so of 2020. And he became aware of this funding going to gain-of-function studies and research, and he said he cut it off again. He cut it off. And then they did another end run around him and reinstituted the funding again. So this is where we are.
It is astonishing that, and it, and there are still people out here that when folks like Francis Collins and Anthony Fauci come on the shows that they come on and say the things that they do, that you know, again, this goes back to what Yuri Bezmenov was talking about. They'll believe it. They'll believe it.
Yeah. Well, you know, people, I guess, are busy. They don't have time to do the kind of homework that some of us do. They don't read these papers. They've probably never read the Biological Weapons Convention, which is online in English and very clearly written at a level that any layperson could understand. You don't have to be a scientist. I'm certainly not. You know, what is biological warfare? What is banned under that convention? And, of course, China is a signatory to it, acceded to that convention, the Biological Weapons Convention in 1984. The U.S. is likewise. Most of the countries in the world have acceded to that convention. But unless you actually read that, you might not really realize, well, what is a bioweapon? What falls under the definition? Well, it has to be conducted with no intent for benefit to humankind, meaning your intent is not to discover a vaccine or defensive reasons to counter a biological. It's hostile. It's hostile intent. And once you realize that and you see, you know, what the Chinese PLA, CCP bioweaponeers have been doing, and by the way, it's not just with the family of coronaviruses, SARS, SARS-1, MERS, this coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, it's not just with coronaviruses, it's with the entire gamut, the span of the most horrific things you don't even want to hear about in terms of biological warfare agents. Once you realize what they're doing, then when you see something like this pandemic, you know, something like this SARS-CoV-2, that virus, and you realize how it's been bioengineered, because you can read it, it's online, it's in English, then your immediate default position is, well, of course this came out of their biological warfare program. Why don't people talk about that more? Certain people do. Some senators like Tom Cotton, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, Rand Paul, certainly, of Kentucky, and a few more. People like Peter Navarro, he gets it, but not too many more. And they don't seem to want to talk about it. So here we go back to what we said at the very beginning of the show, and that is that Americans are just so soft, I guess because they're really very, generally speaking, a moral people, but that makes them soft. And they don't want to believe the horror of the evil that's being plotted against us.
I'm inclined to agree with that, because I think that the consensus among a lot of Americans, among a lot of good Americans, Americans that don't riot, Americans that don't burn their cities to the ground, Americans that don't want to defund the police, and along those, the good people in this country, I think that they thought all this ended when we defeated the Nazis and the Cold War was over. And I think that there's probably something that, you know, well, you know, British people are just like us. They have the same needs, they have the same wants or whatever. And for to a large measure, that's true. But when we talk about good and evil, there's a whole bunch of evil outside. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of evil inside the United States right now. But there's a large measure of evil that exists outside the United States that we really need to wake up and become cognizant of.
Well, if we want to save this republic of ours, we sure do. And so, I thank you for this radio show and people like Gary Binford with his show and so many others to try to alert people. And I'll mention again the conference that we're going to be holding. I think Gary will be there. I think you will be too, right?
Yes,
in
ma'am.
Greenville,
looking
South Carolina, 20 to the 22nd of January, this coming month, 2022. Can't believe it, 2022. Called Rock the Red USA. You can go to rocktheredusa.com for information about it, about the speakers and all of that. So thanks to people like you and conferences like that one. The word is getting out, but it's very hard for good people, and most Americans, I think, are good, moral people.
Yes.
Hard for them to grasp what a society is like that has no religion. China doesn't have a religion. Yes, there are faiths that have been brought in from the outside, like Buddhism and Christianity, but those aren't faiths of the Chinese people. They have no religion and never had any. They don't have the moral foundation or the ethical, the ethos that Western civilization does, because it's based on Judeo-Christian principles. But that's what blinds us, and they're not. They have no such blinders on. That they are completely without restraint. As a Chinese defector virologist Dr. Li Mingyan would say. Unrestricted warfare, completely unrestricted biological warfare and every other kind, which is, you know, listed in that book, Unrestricted Warfare. It's not just biochemical warfare, which is explicitly listed, but every other kind, diplomatic warfare, commercial warfare, space warfare, technological warfare, you could go on the list. But they are unconstrained. There is no break. There's no moral constraint on what they do. People don't get
what?
That. People in America don't get that.
What do you see? And we've talked about a lot of bad things here. And like Johnny Mercer, before I let you go, I want to accentuate the positive. What things do you see, maybe not necessarily on the world stage, but closer to home here in the United States, that gives you encouragement? What things do you see that you take heart
from? I'll come right back to the American people. And it is our goodness and our Judeo-Christian bedrock morality ethos, that eventually, once people wake up and learn what's going on, arouses people to fight back, arouses them to anger, righteous, justifiable anger at what people are trying to do to us, what others, you know, would do to this republic of ours, whether domestically, inside, or externally, coming at us from the outside. We're pretty slow. We're very sluggish at this. But, you know, once the sleeping giant is awakened, I mean, think of World War I, think of World War II. Very slow off the mark, but boy, oh boy, once we get off the mark, look out. And I think that's what's happening. The American people are waking up. They are realizing what's going on. I'll tell you what, I mean, I speak all over the country, whether radio or webinar or actually in person. And, as of, I don't know, two, three, few years ago, if I have mentioned Marxism or communism or even anything about the Chinese Communist Party, I would have had to go on to explain what that is. They would not have really known. Or, I mean, we didn't talk about it tonight, but things in the educational system, like critical race theory. Nobody knew what that was. But boy,
right.
Oh boy, do they now. They've come such a long way in a couple of years. That's the encouragement. They are waking up. They are learning. And they're going to read and study, that they actually are doing that. And I know that because I can throw terms out now, names and terms and things, that would have needed an explanation, like I said, 2, 3, 4 years ago. But now, boom, they know exactly what I'm talking about right off. So that's the encouragement. What is it? I think it was Winston Churchill said something about, how did he put it? We try, everything first before we get to the thing that actually works. But then I'm butchering his quote, but you get the idea that you know, once eventually people wake up, look out.
True. And you know what? It's going to have to happen with the issues. We're going to have to take control of this internal threat first and foremost before we can really seriously address any external threat. I believe largely because they're so tightly intertwined. Trevor,
yes,
out, you know, they've been communists
sure.
have been making inroads in American government since the 1930s, and people laughed at Joe McCarthy.
Nearly.
Yeah, and people laughed at Joe McCarthy, but he was right.
Absolutely right.
Patriot, hero.
Only misfortune is that he never got to finish the job, and the FBI went wandering off the reservation and is lost to us now.
Well, if they want you, they can get you. That's the thing about the government. And those shadowy forces that we know are there that claim to run things in the name of the government. But Claire, I want to thank you once again. Have you got any information that you want to pass on to the folks about where we can, and you're going to get more of you here for sure, because I would really like to have you come back a lot more frequently than you have been. And that's been my
sure.
fault. And
glad
I'm going
to
fix that. I always enjoy the times that we have
to
talk.
Sure. Just please go to rocktheredusa.com, the website. Get your tickets if you would like to attend. Again, 20th to the 22nd of January, this coming month. Watch for my writing and my videos, which will be up, as you said, at the UnitedWest.com? .org.
Org, I think.
One or the other, the United West. at the Citizens Commission on National Security. I write and publish at the David Horowitz Freedom Center's online site, Front Page Magazine, occasionally. I'm
Great
on
place.
With Jamie Glazoff at the Glazoff Gang also. I'm also at American Truth Project, where I just recorded new video yesterday, as a matter of fact. That should be up there soon, American Truth Project. You can text if you'd like. 88202, with my name, Lopez, L-O-P-E-Z, and you get notifications of all the videos I do, interviews at American Truth Project. And then on social media, I'm at Claire M. Lopez on Twitter, same, my name at Facebook. And on Telegram, I'm at Lopez Liberty, always looking for more folks to follow.
Thank you once again, Claire. You know, you're always so generous with your time, and I'm so grateful for that. Michael Cutler and Gary Benford both wanted to make sure that I remembered them to you, so I'm going to go ahead and do that now.
And thank them.
And I'm going to be looking forward to seeing you here in just about a month. I hope you have a terrific Christmas.
Thank you.
The same can't wait to get you back here.
Merry
can't wait
Christmas
to have you back.
To
thank you
and
so
family
much.
As well. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. Wow. Man, was that awesome or what? I tell you, like I said, I promise. My commitment has always been to you guys. If I'm going to have a guest on this show, by God, it's going to be somebody that is worth listening to. And that's exactly what Claire Lopez is. That's a remarkably smart woman, and we are lucky, just as we're lucky to have people like Mike Cutler, like Trevor Loudon, like John Guandolo, who's overdue. We're going to fix that too. To be here to share their information with you. And these guys, are they household names? No. Do you see them all the time out there? No. And I think one of the reasons why is because of what they know. The establishment types, they don't want, MSNBC doesn't want to talk to Claire Lopez. They don't want to talk to Trevor Loudon or Mike Cutler. Those people make CNN and MSNBC and all the other vegetable soups or the alphabets in the bowl there. It makes them nervous. It makes them uncomfortable. And one of the reasons why is because, number one, that idiot George Costanza-looking Brian Stelter pooped his pants. If he had to go eye to eye with someone like Claire Lopez, could you imagine Stelter and Cutler? Give me a break. Jesus wept. Can you? Cutler and Cuomo? Man, would I love to be the cut man in that corner when that fight went down, dude. Down goes Cuomo. Holy cats. And because of these people and their vast wealth, that depth of knowledge that they have, and not only that, but their abilities to communicate that knowledge. And I'm not talking about dumbing it down, and I'm not speaking condescendingly here. I mean, but disseminate that knowledge to as broad a spectrum, as broad a region of people as you can. And they're good at that. And that makes cats like Stelter and Joy Reid, you know, and any of the other heads that you can think of out there. What is that guy's name? Matt Al? Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. It makes them nervous. Because none of those boobs have any serious intellectual substance. They just don't. And I'm very proud of the fact that I have set up this platform to where people like Mike Cutler, where people like our friend Claire, like Trevor Lopez, Trevor Loudon, Claire Lopez, Trevor Loudon, John Guandolo, and others in this spectrum of conservative political thinking, come on. And I let them talk. If I've got an hour, they've got an hour. If I've got 2 hours, well, nobody's getting that but Cutler. There's nothing we can do about it. Then they get it. But I mean, I just want this platform to be opened up to them so that they have time to unpack this stuff. Sirius, Patriot Radio, POTUS, doesn't matter which one, the left, any of those, any talk radio station, any major television program anywhere, 8, 10, 12 minutes tops. That's all you're going to get. That's all they're going to get. Well, hell. Michael Cutler can talk for 12 minutes without breathing in. And I'm not being critical of Mike. I love Mike Cutler. Every time I hear him, I get a master's course, not only in immigration, he makes his points there, but in life. And in Americanism and his take on it. And he's got a great take on it. So I'm happy to let him talk as long as he wants. He's not boring anybody, and he's got an opportunity to get that out there. Same thing with Claire, same thing with Trevor. I'm going to give these guys all the time that they need, all the time that they want. And there's a benefit here. I mean, and I'm going to say this, and I know it's going to sound completely selfish, and I don't mean it to, but I know it will. If I'm the only one that gets anything out of what they say, I really don't care, because that's fine by me. I'm happy to share this information. Don't get me wrong. And I'm happy to have them on the program. It's a win-win. They get exposure. I get exposure and all that. Yeah, whatever. Okay. That's great. That's great. Cool. But in terms of the information that they possess and my particular interests, I I wouldn't exactly say I'm a fanboy because William Shatner's not involved, but I'm probably close. This is my jam, and this is my thing. And what these guys talk about and their take on things and their perspective on these issues nationally and internationally, they resonate with me. And if they can bring me to a clearer understanding of these things that happen in the world, as well as here closer to home, then myself as an individual, as a citizen, as an American citizen, as a part of an informed and disseminating electorate, I'm so much the better, aren't I? Exactly. And I would hope that you guys feel just as selfishly about that as I do, and that way everybody does. And there's nothing wrong with being selfish about that. I hope that you listen. I hope that you can gain something from it, because I know I do every daggone time these guys come on. It enriches me, and I'm happy to have them here. Going to take a little break. Where are we at? Man, it's been almost an hour. Far out. I might have about a half hour or so left in me. We're not going to go two. But we will go 90 or so, and we'll see what happens with it, because I'm not going to be able to close up shop in 8 measly minutes. No, what is it? Yeah, well, anyway, excuse me. Going to take a little brief musical break, and we will be back with more of a conservative's perspective right after this.
And just before we go, let's end the evening with a word from the leader of the free world. I'll personally write a check to anybody who can decipher what Joe Biden is trying to convey here.
Yeah, that, you know, well, you know, what do you want to do with Biden? I want to box him. I should be so lucky. You know what I mean? But this, the kinds of things, or, you know, stuff that's coming out of Florida, stuff that's coming out of, you know, Robert E. Lee been in Afghanistan. You're the one. No, anyway.
Florida, Robert E. Lee. How is that man dressing himself, let alone leading the most powerful nation on earth? yourself and one for your dreams. You drift through the years and life seems tame till one dream appears and love is its name.
And we are back. Hey, everybody. James Bostic here, Conservatives Perspective on Patriot Nation Radio at blogtalkradio.com. We do it twice a week live, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a recorded incarnation of the program that goes out on the Mojo. I got my Mojo working, baby. Mojo50radio.com is where you can find that. And if you aren't listening, as I tell you time and yet time again, one would think I wouldn't have to say it after this long period, but it bears repeating. If you aren't listening, you should be, because that's right, the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. Well, that was a swell, absolutely swell 40, 45 minutes there with Claire Lopez. Tickled to death that she came in. And again, I'm gonna make sure that we have her on here a lot more. She's a wellspring of information, just like Mike Cutler. Same thing with Trevor Loudon and a whole bunch of awesome people that are going to be down at Rock of the Red. And I am going to be glad-handed and pressing the flesh, business carding like you cannot believe. I've made some good inroads with some of those folks already. And I tell you what I want. I don't really care how huge it gets. No, that's bullshit, man. I want to be huge. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, I want to be big. But more importantly, if I'm going to be big, I want it to be because this show's good. I don't want it to be because of a gimmick. I don't want it to be because of a catchphrase. I don't want it to be because of some bright, shiny object, either cultural or intellectual or spiritual, whatever. I want it to be because it's good. And people like Claire Lopez and Trevor and even Gary Binford, he's doing the same thing. You know, these folks, some of the best of what they do. And it's got to rub off, man. It's just got to rub off. So yeah, I would rather be good. There was a character I remember in a book, it was Islands in the Stream, and it was Hemingway's last book. He didn't complete it. He didn't finish it. And it was finished by, I think, members of the family and folks that knew him well, and they had notes, and they kind of cobbled together how the book was. It was somewhat semi-autobiographical, and it was about an artist named Thomas Hudson. And instead of being a writer, he was a painter, and he was a pretty successful painter and lived a life very similar to Hemingway's. But there was a quote in the book, and I'll never, ever forget it, and I always liked Hemingway. I didn't really care that much for that book, but that's another story. But there was this one quote, and he was talking with a friend of his. In Montana. He had a big ranch in Montana, and then he had a place, one of the islands off of Cuba. And then, of course, he hung out at Key West a lot. But they were talking, and he was talking about his work, and he was talking about, when are you going to, it's getting about time for you to do some stuff. And he said, I'm not feeling it just yet. And the guy, and he said, you're Thomas Hudson. It doesn't matter. You could put that paintbrush in your O-ring and paint with your behind, and you're going to make money. And they went on back and forth through the conversation. We got to get something out there. And to shut the whole thing down, to shut the whole discussion down, Thomas Hudson replied, "It doesn't matter if I'm proud. No, I don't have to be proud of it. I only have to do it well." Meaning it didn't matter what anybody else thought of it. It didn't even matter if he considered it good work or his best work or where he ranked it himself personally. It meant that whatever he was doing to the utmost of his skills and talents. I don't have to be proud of it. I just have to do it well. That will stand for itself. And from the time that I decided, okay, I've already spent $80 on this freaking USB microphone. I'm committed now. I've shelled out $80 on this damn thing. So here we go. And from that time on, I promise you, and even though it may not have sounded it, because while I knew my content and I knew that I had something to say, I didn't necessarily know exactly how to put all that together, largely from a technical standpoint. I've overcome a lot of that now. But anyway, from that very moment that I did that and decided to share my thoughts and the information that I had come across with you guys out there, I did it the very best I could. And you do it long enough, you get used to, you get the hang of it. And that's kind of like where I'm at now. I started this Thanksgiving weekend of 2012. That November, Barack Obama had just won re-election, second term. And for a lot of folks like me, for a lot of folks like us, and I know a lot of you guys feel the same way, it was a pretty disheartening time. It was a pretty discouraging time. It was really frustrating. We didn't like what we saw with the economy. We didn't like what we saw with the culture. We didn't like a lot of different things that we saw happening to America's prestige throughout the world, and the threats to our national security through the foreign policy decisions that were made. And I've been toying with it for about 4 years, and I said, okay, you know what, let's just do it. I read up for a week and looked at a lot of different information and articles that I thought would help best identify myself and where I fit in, if I do, within that spectrum, which is a very broad spectrum, conservatism. It really is. Much more so than what you see in the newspapers and magazines, on TV, certainly, and in the movies. It's a very broad spectrum of people, and I was looking at all this different stuff, and I went to some of the most reputable sources I could find, most reliable sources I could find. And I came up with it, and boom, I started doing it. And I love doing it. God help me, I love it. I do. I love doing this. I love talking to these kind of people. I love moving through this particular strata, this level of thinking in these individuals, and being able to take what I learned from them and what they've explained to me, or perspectives that I might not necessarily have considered, and then in turn share it with you guys. It's a huge deal, and I enjoy it. I enjoy it tremendously. I'm blessed to get to do it. Not dead air, just taking a drink. All this talking will make a fellow thirsty. Christmas time is here. And I work in the school business. Most of you guys know that. And for those of you who don't, by the way, new listeners, if we have any, thank you so much for being here. My daytime job is in the school business. And I work in the school. I work in the high school that I graduated from. I always like to say I've got that whole welcome back Cotter thing going for me. And I work with the two coolest groups of kids in that school, period. End of story, bar none. The autistic group and the moderately impaired group. And those are just labels. And to be honest with you, I'm not really sure what the hell they mean. I'm really not. And I've been in the special ed business for about 17 years. I work with some remarkable kids who need some help with certain things. And water seeking its own level, I am uniquely suited to help them negotiate this part of their academic career on a lot of different levels. You want to know why? I'll tell you why. Hold on a minute. Let me make sure nobody's listening. Special ed myself, man. Absolutely. There's no question about it. Didn't realize it then. It was only in retrospect, and I'll tell you how I came up with my diagnosis. It was only after being in that environment, working with special education students in their varying forms, their varying levels of need. Let's put it that way. Some didn't need a whole lot of help. Some did. And it was looking at some of those behaviors and those kids that I came to the conclusion that a little on the autistic side myself. Asperger's is what they call it. It's a condition that kind of is the rocks and shoals between the ocean of autism and the safe shoreline of whatever normality is. And it was through looking at some of these kids and identifying behaviors in my own youth and understanding those motivations of why they did what they did, even though, you know, right or wrong or whatever, well, hell, man, that's why you're so good with these dudes. You're one of them. You're their king. They see you as their leader. Take this, mold them, turn them into good citizens, and that's exactly what we're doing. The special ed department at the high school I work at is par excellence. They ain't nobody better. They're really good at what they do. And we got terrific kids. And I don't think I'll ever leave that. I like teaching. I like working with those guys. And, you know, for 10 years, I haven't had to. I can do both. And I like that. I like that. Plus, I knew that I was well-suited for radio because and anybody who knows me will nod their head at this. I talk to myself all the time. Well, it ain't no joke. I've done it since I was a wee little nipper. And they fussed at me, and they got on me. Who in the hell are you? Will you stop that? And just on and on and on and on. And, you know, I tried to stop. But I couldn't. And so I didn't. And it's cool. And for those of you who might have that problem and people are dogging you out about it, don't worry. Just keep doing it. You're working things out. So don't sweat it. And they don't understand that. So whatever, man. Whatever. You know, that's just like their opinion. Somewhere, I think we were talking about Christmas, or I got on to Christmas. The kids that I work with, rather than being your emotional, disaffected teen, your gothic you know, creepy, hormonally ravaged kid. The kids that I work with view Christmas with a lot more childlike anticipation and tension and anxiety and just uncontrollable excitedness. And sometimes it drains me. It also helps keep me in the spirit, too, as an adult who sees, well, you know, there's just a lot of terrible things going on in the world. Claire Lopez and I just spent 45 minutes talking about a good deal of it, so we know it's there. And when you immerse yourself in this kind of stuff, and it's rarely good news. It's rarely good news. What was that? So Ann Murray sure could use a little good news today. That's exactly right. I would love to say, nobody got killed last night. No buildings burned down. Nobody tried to shoot a cop. No little girl got assaulted because a man decided that he wants to be perceived as a woman and insist upon society humoring him, enabling him in this, gets assaulted. I would love to have stories like that. And there are a lot of them out there, but, you know, that's not what we see. So these kids and their enthusiasm and their excitement, they kind of keep me buoyed up. But at the same time, you know, you kind of get caught up with them. And I'm like, damn it, is Christmas ever going to get here? I can't take any more of this anticipation of these Christmas projects, of these refrigerator magnet slash ornaments, which is foam rubber, googly-eyed Elmer glue, glittery pipe. Let's get it on, man. Let's bring Christmas. I'm ready. Let's not drag it out. And we're not dragging it out. Time's passing the way it always does. But for kids, this is like crunch time. They're a week out. They are a week out from Christmas. Any slip up, any mistake in your thinking, any misreading the situation, any mistake at all, and it's a sock full of coal and switches. It's broccoli-flavored jelly beans and asparagus licorice whips. Oh, yeah. So they're working hard, man. They're working hard to keep it together because they don't want to screw up, because they don't want to disappoint their mom and dad. They don't want to disappoint Santa. They want to be good because they better be, for goodness sake. Santa Claus is coming to town. And it's hard on some of them. And, you know, I see that on a daily basis, and they work on it, and they don't want to screw up. They don't want to be yelled at school. They don't want to be yelled at home. That's a lot of pressure on a kid, especially like some of the guys I know, because some of the guys I know are like me, and, you know, we've been yelled at for a long, long time. We're used to having people yell at us. It's a wonderful time of year, and these guys are caught up in it, and it does me good because it kind of keeps my humbuggedness at bay. Even though it does make me a little tired at times. And we've got three and a half days left. Today's Thursday, so we'll go to school Friday. We'll go to school tomorrow. And then Monday and Tuesday will be our last two full days before the Christmas holiday starts for our vacation. And then we'll do a little less than half a day on Wednesday. And they're out of there. So 4 days. 4 days of Buddy the Elf, of A Christmas Story, of Christmas music, of Charlie Brown, Rudolph, and that's all part of it. Because these guys, by the time they get out of school, this is the equivalent. This is Christmas is like sugar. This would be like us on a Friday afternoon sending notes, just letting them spend the last 2 hours of the day eating Pez and chocolate and Pixie Sticks. You know, he'll just set a bowl of sugar out there in front of them with a little bit of food coloring in it and give them spoons. All right, guys, get on those buses and you all have some have a fantastic weekend. You and Mom and Dad, y'all get after it. Well, you know, Christmas does the same thing to them, except it's everywhere. It's not. It's like the parents send them to school jacked up on Hershey bars or Mountain Dew. Hershey bars and Mountain Dew. Code red, baby. And I'm not talking about the soda pop. I mean, they would come in. It's a terrible time. Not dead air. Just thinking about all that stuff I'm going back to tomorrow. I wouldn't trade it. It sounds like I'm griping, but you know what? I'm really not. I love it. I love what I do. I wouldn't trade it for anything, and I'm not going to. Just like I wouldn't trade this for anything. A conservative's perspective is heard here Tuesdays and Thursdays. 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is on Patriot Nation Radio, and you find Patriot Nation Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You just go to blogtalkradio.com, type in Patriot Nation Radio, and you've got a selection of shows. You've got ACP Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. You have, he's on hiatus right now and won't be back till January. Thursdays at 8 p.m., right behind ACP, you've got Mark Hoffman. El Guapo, the handsome one, in Patriot Nation Radio. Mark and I have been wingmen together for a long time now. Used to be Friday nights, and we are fundamentally the best 1-2 conservative punch in all alternative media. And we have another show, too, a guy named Kevin White, a terrific fellow, an author, publisher, the American Allegiance program on Wednesdays. I met Kevin a couple of years ago at Rock the Red. He was a guest on the program, kept in contact. Lo and behold, he turns out to be a really good radio man in his own right. And he's got a show Wednesday, 7 p.m. Compelling guests, outstanding talk radio from three really sharp customers. Oh, and thank you so much for hanging out and allowing me the time to hang out with you and share a few things. It's this Thursday. You know what? Next week, Christmas week, we'll probably do some shows. We'll do some shows week before Christmas. I'm not exactly sure about the week after. I don't know. We may do a Christmas retrospective sometime in there. We'll have the openings. Might do some old-time radio Christmas shows, talk about some of that stuff. Whatever we do, we'll be doing it with you in mind. So, take good care of yourselves. Thanks again for the opportunity to hang out with you. We will be back next Tuesday looking at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.